If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
And for me, what I love about winemaking is that you're taking an agricultural commodity and you're turning it into something that invokes such a thought response with people. You know, you and I just met, but we have this common bond of wine, and we could probably sit down with a couple bottles of wine and spend all night together. You know, it's really cool to have something like that to really form bonds with other people.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 503. This week we feature Tracy Hundley, owner and co-winemaker at Hundley Cellars in Harpersfield, Ohio. More than 300 wineries and 5 AVAs can be found in the great state of Ohio. Northeast Ohio, just outside of Cleveland, produces several great varieties, but Pinot Noir commands the most attention. Award-winning Pinot Noir, in fact. I visited Tracy Hundley, owner and co-winemaker at Hundley Cellars in Harpersfield, just a few weeks ago. Hundley is a classic family-owned winery, keeping to a great tradition of making wine from local grapes. There is nothing better than a wine visit to this part of Ohio. You can also hear Tracy on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term tartrates. I'm back in my home state of Ohio. Very happy to be here. In fact, in Harpersfield Township, and I'm here with Tracy Hundley of Hundley Cellars. Tracy, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you today?
I'm great. It's a real pleasure to meet you. Very happy to come by here because I've been to many wineries in this neck of the woods, and Ohio makes great wine. And fun to come by and talk to somebody I have yet to interview. So welcome to the program.
Thank you.
A lot of ground to cover, but first thing we'll talk about is you are in the Grand River AVA, correct?
We are.
Which is a very unique area, specifically for Pinot Noir and other wines, but that seems to be the most popular. Why is the Grand River such a big deal?
The river, honestly, but way more than that. So when the glaciers pushed up through Lake Erie to form the Great Lakes, they stopped and formed several ridges here. So on the north side of the river here, we have a lot of heavy clay soils, which aren't the best for viticulture, but we make do. On the other side, there's a lot of sand and shale, which creates the Pinot that you spoke about. And I actually buy my Pinot grapes from the south side of the river, from Tony DeBevick at Chalet de Vignes. No, and the other component is maturation. Because the Great Lakes is just this great thermal body, it allows grapes to hang longer, keeps the heat in the atmosphere. And also on the opposite side, because it's so cold, it prevents early bud break, which mitigates the chance for a frost to hurt early buds.
About how far from Lake Erie as the crow flies are we?
7 miles.
It's really funny because you don't really get that feeling. You see it if you go a little south here, you can see it quite well.
Yes.
But it feels like you're quite a ways away.
It does. We call it the Harpersfield breeze. It tends to blow over the vineyard here, and it can be a hot day. And a lot of times, especially early in the spring, you get this beautiful, cool breeze coming right off the lake.
Yeah, that's what's fun about coming out here. And of course, there are several wineries out here, which is really nice. And from the city of Cleveland, about how far are we?
45 minutes.
Okay, not bad. Very good. Good place to be.
It is.
Well, one of my favorite things to talk about when it comes to wine is family winemakers, because so many people in the wine business are first generation, second generation, etc. And if I'm not mistaken, you would be second generation, or did you open it together? Or?
So I would be first generation. My brother and I actually founded the project, and my dad used to make wine in the basement and things like that. But I'm the one that actually went to school to do this on a commercial basis.
You studied under the UC Davis program for viticulture,
the
correct?
Certificate program, which is all online, but it's incredibly intensive. I have my bachelor's of science in biology from Kent State here, and it challenged me more than anything I ever studied in undergrad.
Really? Why? Why? I mean, other than the complication part of it.
Chemistry, just the intensity of the chemistry and the physics, and they want you to really know how to solve any winemaking problem. And really, that's the beauty of the course. Just to make wine isn't rocket science, but once you have things start to go wrong, that's when you pull all those tools you learned at the program.
So things go wrong? Really? What a surprise that is.
That's shocked.
It's not just a matter of getting up in the morning and having a glass of wine and looking at the grapes.
Yes.
There's a little more to it than that.
Just a little tiny bit.
Now, you said you're the co-winemaker.
Yes.
And who works with you on
that? So there's a gentleman named John Manis, who's just a brilliant winemaker, who's been making wine in the area for, I believe, over 25 years. He's helped quite a few other wineries get their start, including Lorello, Kosicek, and then he came on board with us and has been just a huge asset.
That's great. Tony Kosicek is a great guy, by the way.
He is.
Yeah, we interviewed him a couple of years ago.
Awesome.
Yeah, nice winery. Mm. Starting a winery is certainly not for the faint at heart. There's a lot of work involved. I always like to say your retail, your wholesale, your manufacturing, your service, you're a little of everything. So what was your journey to say, I want to do this?
So it goes back to actually my brother who I referenced earlier. He was a chef with Michael Simon and a good friend of his, working in Cleveland, incredibly talented chef. And in the meantime, I was a scientist and a mom, and I loved wine, of course, absolutely loved wine. And together, I was living in South Carolina at the time, but really homesick. And so we were having just these conversations about how cool would it be to plug in his culinary, you know, skill set with my science and love for wine. And I was up here visiting and I didn't want to go back to South Carolina. And I said, Greg, what do you think? Would you want to have a winery? Would you ever do it? And he's like, there's nothing I'd rather do in the whole wide world.
Wow.
And so that started the ball rolling, and it took a long time to reach critical mass. I'd say about 3 years before it actually looked like it was going to materialize.
Sure. What year was that you started?
We started, the winery itself started in 2014. We put the vines in 2011. And we bought this property in 2009. It was an old ranch home that we completely converted into the winery.
There is a very complex road to building a tasting room, to building vineyards, to doing all this process. But from a management point of view, from a licensing point of view, was that a difficult road?
Extremely difficult. That regulations was, you know, licensing. Our federal application through the TTB got declined, I think, 8 times over things like a zip code being wrong. Or my brother put the application and put Harpersfield, Ohio instead of Geneva, Ohio, because we were new to the area. And they rejected it just on the basis that we put Harpersfield instead of Geneva. So.
Sure. Well, that's kind of dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
And I guess that's what federal government's there for.
That's true. Yeah. It does make some sense to some degree.
It does. But then just EPA permitting. And for instance, we drilled the well and the well driller went too deep and hit saline. And so the well was unusable. And so we ended up having to have an ASTM certified specific tank built. And we bring in city water once a week.
Oh, really?
So just every, you know, and the EPA had to approve that. And it's just the regulations, it's not for the faint of heart. Every time I hit a wall, I just refused to stop. I just kept going. I'm like, walk into the wall until it falls down.
Yeah, sure. And that, of course, bringing water in like that adds to your expenses.
It is.
Yeah.
Don't get in the wine business if you want to become rich, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to love it.
I think you got to be rich first, really, is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, you're from Ohio originally, I'm
yes.
assuming. Whereabouts?
Stowe, just north of Akron.
Sure. Yeah, my nephew is from there. Well, for my 2 cents, it's nice to see you stayed in the area, or at least came back to the area to go down this particular road. But I have to wonder, for those who are familiar with Northeast Ohio wine, there are a lot of wineries. I mean, you have Harpersfield right next door. We have a couple down the road, St. Joseph. We were talking about intimidation of wine. Well, it's intimidating as an owner to walk into something like that. How was that for you from a competitive point of view?
It was extremely intimidating. I looked at Nick Ferranti and Tony DeBevick as idols when I was coming up here in my 20s going to the wineries. If you would have told me then this was going to be real, I would have just laughed. So this is incredibly intimidating. But what made it not intimidating is the way that they embraced me. And as a young female winemaker, I thought I was going to get laughed out of town. But I was able to hold my own in conversations with them, and I committed as a business owner to using Grand River Valley fruit. You can walk into a lot of wineries here, read the label, and see California or Washington on a lot of the wines. And I think once they realized I was serious about using the grapes, using this natural resource, they gained respect. And like I said, I'd buy a lot of my grapes from Tony during harvest, and we worked together. And our business model was a little different in that I wanted our customers to be first. I've been to so many wineries throughout the years here and sat and just was ignored or treated like I must not know much about wine. And so we wanted it to be approachable for everybody and greet everybody with love and kindness. And from the day we opened the door, my mom, who runs a tasting room, is brilliant with people. She knew 90% of the customers' names that would come in, and she would remember them week after week. You can't compete with that love. And I mean, it'll sound hippie, but when people ask me the secret to the business, it's love. We love our customers.
Well, that's well said. I agree, because it is about people. It's got to be about people, and it's got to be about the conversation and all that kind of thing. Now, you say you're buying grapes, but you also have your own vineyards,
we
correct?
Do.
And about how many acres are you farming?
We farm five. We produce about 30% of our wine's estate.
And I always ask people to look into their crystal ball. Do you have a plan to grow more vineyards or buy more property?
At this stage, there's a surplus, unfortunately, because people aren't committed to buying Grand River fruit in this area. And there's nothing in the state laws that entices us to use Ohio fruit. It's actually cheaper to buy the juice from California. So
really?
Tony has an excess, typically. I'd rather keep him supported versus spending the $15,000 an acre here.
Yeah, $15,000 an acre, folks. When everybody ever asks about the price of a wine, there's the story, let alone the making.
That's just planting it, not maintaining it every year.
Right. It's certainly a big deal. How many cases are you producing?
So we produce, I do things in gallons, I'm sorry, 5,000 gallons.
What our listeners enjoy, what I enjoy, are small wineries because of, literally, you're right, the love that goes into the bottle. So kudos to you for what you're doing.
Thanks.
But you're competing in a market that's local, as in on the street, regional for the Grand River AVA, for the state of Ohio. You're really biting off a big piece, aren't you?
It's exciting. It's thrilling. And I love our wines.
Well, that's all that counts. You got to like the wines. Let's talk about the wines. Gosh, we should do that.
Yes.
So, obviously, you are making Pinot Noir, which is all about this area. And I'm going to just drop in my own two cents. For people who have not tried Grand River Pinot, you will be surprised. It is as good as any Pinot I've ever had. Very impressive. What else are you growing?
So, we grow Riesling, Traminette, Saval, Vidal, Niagara, a little bit of Delaware. That's all we really grow here. We're low. And I knew when we did the site selection that I wasn't going to get away with Pinots here and Chardonnays. So.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. For you, for distribution, are you available in restaurants here or local stores, that kind of thing?
Just restaurants. I don't like releasing it to local stores other than a few little markets up at Geneva on the Lake. They have total price control, and I've walked into several grocery stores and seen a nice bottle of local wine that if you walk in the winery is going to cost you $20 that's marked down to $10.99, and
wow.
I just am not okay with compromising the intrinsic value of our wine.
That's a tough one. That's makes competing for you that much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And small wineries, you're competing with big guys all over the place,
sure.
Including here.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
No doubt.
I like to ask a lot of winemakers this question. It can go positive or negative, but what makes you crazy about the wine business?
I've already cited it. It's that you can be in this exceptionally beautiful growing area and get away with buying $7 a gallon juice from California and still be a full Ohio winery and sit right next to us. Not that Harpersfield does not do that, but there are several wineries in the area, and I won't name them. They can figure out by reading the labels that do.
Sure.
And to me, it's just so unauthentic, and they're using our natural resource without using what makes it special as being an AVA.
Sure. It's fascinating to think about buying this juice so cheap. But you're right, it's all about here, and it is about the terroir, right, in Grand River.
It is, and for us, you know, it's anywhere from, on the low end with a Niagara Concord, $6 a gallon to produce it. But once you get past that into the Rieslings and the Chardonnays, I mean, for a Grand River Valley juice, the grapes per ton, you know, you're looking at $12 to $20 a gallon. So it's hard. That talk about trying to be competitive, that's what drives me crazy, because...
Yeah.
I can't compete with somebody like that from a cost standpoint, and I won't. And to me, it's about integrity. If you're going to do it right or don't do it.
Well said. That's nice to hear. You know, COVID has presented a challenge to everybody, of course. We are doing this interview in mid-July, I would say, of 2020. And where has that put you guys? I mean, you started not that long ago, and then you hit a two-year wall. and everybody's coming back. So where are you guys with all this?
There's been a lot of silver lining in it. We changed our operating method and got lean and mean. As I told you, I just cleaned the men's room when you came in. But
The romance of the winery.
It is, but cleaning, we were hiring a cleaning service. It saves us $7,000 a year for me to take 40 minutes to clean my baby, you know, and I love it. It's a passion. I put on my music super loud, and so that's one item. Just restructuring our staffing. My mom and I cover a lot more hours on the tasting room. So just running it leaner, I think, has helped us. And we've actually improved our bottom line, not during COVID, but immediately afterwards. We were up before what we were before COVID. And like I said, we have a lot of regulars that love us and that we love. And even in the height of the pandemic, we were running an awesome wine drive-through where masks on, call in, give me your credit card number. We would sell cases and cases and cases of wine every day to the people that wanted us to stay afloat.
You gotta have wine.
Amen.
Yeah. We've talked about this with many of our interviews about women winemakers because they are coming on, you know, gangbusters. Here in this area, Harpersville, Geneva, Thompson, Madison, are there many female winemakers?
There are several. Kim Lorella is the first one that comes to mind, and she's been an awesome idol, I guess I could say. She's awesome. She's amazing and very gifted. And then there's a new winery, Amarisha, coming up, and those are both, it's women-owned, both of them, and I know they'll probably use some consultation, but I have a feeling they'll be very involved in the winemaking process also.
Nice. But I get the impression from what you've told me that you've been very welcomed into it. It's not about what your gender is, it's about your attitude.
It's so true, and it was probably the most stunning surprise of everything that I've gone through is how well I was accepted.
Yeah, that's great.
Into the old boys network. And we're talking about guys that have been doing it their whole lives.
Yeah. But also, you're a farmer, and these other people you've been talking about are welcoming you. That is the true spirit of the farming world.
We had a tractor break down during planting. Within an hour, we had another tractor from another vineyard. I mean, when my brother, who I mentioned earlier, unfortunately has passed, and he was one of the maiden vineyard managers, Matt Meineke, who owns M Cellars, immediately stepped up and shared his labor pool and manages the vineyard.
Matt's another great guy. Oh, I interviewed him a couple years ago.
Yeah. Absolute gem.
Yeah. I got to get back there again. And he's due for a...
Yeah, and his wife, Tara Meineke, helps a lot in the winemaking process, too. So
yeah, it's real fascinating. And of course, he has very mechanical skills, which is certainly very helpful when it comes to this kind of thing. Because, once again, as I said, you do all these different things. It's a real challenge. We may have covered this already just with what you've said, but do you have a mentor, one particular, or a couple people you really think of, you know, in that high point?
I would say Nick Ferranti and Tony DeBevic, hands down. I mean, and Wes Gralowski over at Harpersville, too. And, of course, Kim Lorella, because she's, you know, one of the founding females.
That's nice. I like how founding females is kind of neat. Is that a formal term, or is that just your term?
It is now.
I like that. It's good. I've come to the part in the interview where I ask the question that strikes fear into the eyes and the heart of all winemakers. I'm kidding. It's my favorite question. I'm sure you've done your fair amount of interviews, media, whatever it might be. What's the one question that you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
How about what's next? Like what I've never thought about, you know, what's 10 years from now? Am I still a winemaker? I don't know.
Actually, that's a good answer, and I'll tell you why, because a winemaker in Finger Lakes, and I've repeated this many times, once said to me, you don't meet very many former winemakers.
Right.
And you really don't, because it is a passion. It gets in your blood. Now, we were talking about your experience with UC Davis, which, of course, is, you know, world-renowned with winemakers, but you had also said you started with science. Tell me about your education in that regard before you became a winemaker.
Okay, so I had my Bachelor of Science in Biology and Pre-Medicine and had planned to become a doctor and was working in the emergency room, and the heaviness was really getting to me, and I knew I'm a sensitive soul, and I knew that there was no way I would stay sane as a physician. So I walked completely away and ended up taking a totally different career path. I was a software developer and corporate trainer for Georgia-Pacific's corrugated division. So traveled all around the country and taught a bunch of businessmen how to make more money. Not the path I thought I'd take. And then I was blessed with two children and walked away. And that's when I did the certificate program online when my babies were rocking in the chairs.
This is fascinating to me because so many winemakers were pre-med or in some form of science because it just, and that's not everybody, but it's pretty well common.
Is it?
Yeah, it's fascinating to me.
It is.
But it's also interesting meeting you because of the old, you can't judge a book. You don't know what's inside somebody's head and what their road is like. So That's pretty darn cool.
Thanks.
Like any other part of the country, 50 states are making wine. 50 states are growing vineyards. And Northeast Ohio, really, really incredible wines here. Your tasting room, is this by appointment? Can people just walk on in? How do you do it here?
Just walk on in. You'll probably see my beautiful 70-year-old mom at the front with a giant smile greeting you.
Ah, that's nice. I like that. So for our listeners who would like to learn about you online, what is your website?
www.hundleycellars.com, or you can reach us by phone at 440-361-3088. We also have a big Facebook presence. Just look up Hundley Cellars. That's where we put a lot of our events.
Cool. Very nice. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, absolutely, Ray. Thank you.
Learn more by visiting HundleyCellars.com. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at LifeBetweenTheVines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Pascoff. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2022.